Get ready. It's time for the Idaho Podcast with your host, Danny Ventura. Welcome to the Idaho Podcast, where we feature the people who live, work, and play in Idaho. So happy to have you with us today. Today, my guest is Megan McCaleb, and Megan has a long list of accomplishments, none the least of which she is an award-winning comedian. She's also a CEO of a company called Improv Teen Culture, a host of her own podcast called I Hardly Know Her, and an award-winning author of her own autobiography, which we're going to speak about a little bit later. But for now, welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been super looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Well, having been a podcast person yourself for several episodes, this is kind of like a lot of pressure for me because you have a lot more experience at it.
You're doing great. The setup is great. Your energy is great. I think, yeah, you're doing amazing right out of the gate.
You're so kind. Thank you so much. Well, again, the show is all about the people of Idaho. So I always start with what your Idaho story is. And I believe you're a native. So.
I am. I feel like it's a rarity these days, but I am a born and raised Boise native. And
right.
Yeah, I've enjoyed being here. I mean, it's a great place to grow up. I was the baby of six kids in a blended family. We had a lot of things going on, and I'm an OG.
An OG. And you've never left Idaho?
No. Okay. And
I mean, for any
not
other,
for
to
anything.
Live
in I moved out of my parents' house into married life here in Idaho, and I never moved away officially. I've traveled quite a lot. And actually, it's been nice as I grew up and started traveling and seeing how the world had a lot of things that I was like, oh, things are very similar in so many ways. And I always kind of thought, oh, Boise might be like so small or not really having a lot to offer. There was those definite moments. And then I really have grown to appreciate and love being here even more because it does have such a great homey feeling and all four seasons and all the different things so close by. And a great place to raise my kids now.
So great. And you named many of the things that drew myself and my wife here as well. Oh. It's a great place to be for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. So I know you were named best local comedian by Boise Weekly, and that was in 2019. But what got you into comedy and what also led you to find your company, Improv Teen Culture?
You know, I stumbled into comedy officially by two different invitations. One of them, when I started improv, was an invitation from my older brother who let me know about an improv troupe in town that was looking for more players. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So I went and showed up and learned the improv part. And then a couple of years later, some of my improv friends who also did stand-up comedy were doing open mics and stuff. So I went to watch a show once, an open mic, and my friend that was hosting called me up as the next comedian, and I had nothing prepared. I just went up and talked and shared some weird story about a trip I'd gone on recently. And I was like, wait a minute, I got to learn more. So in both cases, it was kind of accidental, even though, I mean, I was very much like the attention grabber as a child, very like talk successively in class on all my report cards type of a thing. And class clown, all those types of classic things. But living in Boise, that was one of the disadvantages is I thought, well, no one's going to discover me here. I can't like do comedy unless I move away. It was kind of a pleasant surprise to stumble into it and have that as an outlet while I worked in corporate.
Wow. Now, how frequently do you do stand up today?
Starting to more and more. So it's been very up and down and around because you really do need to have time to focus on it. It's quite a complicated craft in a lot of ways. So it's sort of been an underlying theme for me for quite a long time. And then recently, like I really wanted to do more. And I think that what we think about and focus on, and I started writing more just as practice, it just sort of started coming up a little bit more. So I do usually a couple shows a month. Most of them are like for private gigs, corporate parties. I have one tonight is for a moms and daughters sorority, like mom weekend for sorority girls and stuff. So I'm like, you know, it's a little bit of a variety of different things, but I try to still keep my toe in it pretty regularly.
Cool. And do you custom tailor your material for these gigs you do, or do you, kind of plug and play?
A teeny bit. So there, it's a little bit of a misconception about how comedy works because every comic's different. So certainly some people can very much customize material. I'm not that type of a writer. So I really take gigs that are probably going to be a better audience for me. So a room full of women, especially moms, like that's my vibe because my material is about being a midlife single mom my religious journey, my, you know, all these different things that are relevant to my personal life. So if I ever do certain corporate gigs, where I need to get a little more neutral, then I just sort of pick from a grab bag of like general human things that we might observe. Or I do infuse a little bit of my improv bits where I get some of the material from the audience. And that's just sort of in a framework that feels very custom to them, but they're also part of the show.
Nice. I'm always intrigued by comedians because we enjoy going to listen and watch comedians.
So yeah. That's always good to laugh. But it's you would notice then as you're selecting what comedian you like that certain style, right? Or like there's just different flavors of comedy, different delivery styles, and it's very subjective. So yeah, being mindful of which audiences, I really feel like it's going to be a win-win for both of us.
Mm-hmm. So you founded your company Improv Team Culture, mm-hmm. right? And you have this really, lack of a better word, cool concept of the quote unquote yes and principle.
Right.
And so tell me a little bit about the company and share with our listeners something about that yes and philosophy.
For sure. So when I learned improv originally and started playing in shows on the weekends and evenings, I was a bank manager at the time. So I was working in corporate, I was leading a team and really found that that was a fun, whimsical outlet and very quickly saw how those rules that I was learning, those principles for play, were really shifting the way that I was showing up at work. And it was changing my mindset about my own thoughts and internal dialogue. And really just was fascinating to me to see that the things that I was learning to structure a successful scene were just as applicable in everyday life because we're all characters performing life, right? And so I had that idea pretty early on that I wanted to do some kind of fun workshop to take it into the workplace and just really started playing with it a lot, like quite a few years ago. I've been doing it off and on for over 13, 14 years now in some capacity. And it's because of those principles. So of course the core rule of improv is yes. And very simply put, yes is accepting and acknowledging what is. Whether or not you agree with it, it's just, yes, I'm acknowledging this thing or idea or task at work, whatever the thing is, and becomes our action item to do something with it, whether we have to delegate it or if we do take ownership, maybe we need to brainstorm or look at what tools are possible. So it's a very simple way to stay in ready position for life and stay productive and positive, especially when we maybe have some challenges we need to navigate.
I love that. And I had shared with you a little earlier that I used a similar technique teaching my teams when we consulted so many businesses,
yeah.
that the idea of customer service is the easiest thing for us to say as humans is no. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest thing to say, but it's a cop-out. No is a cop-out in most cases.
Yeah.
So I try to teach my teams the concept and the idea of yes, and this is how.
Yeah.
So it may not be exactly what the customer or client or guest or whomever may be looking for, but it's the idea that you're not just saying no.
Yeah.
You're saying, I'm going to work this out and yes, and this is how we're going to be able to accomplish mostly what you're looking for. And
I think love it.
That's a great customer service.
So. Yeah. Because to your point with the no, it's so blocking and negative and just deflates people. And we do instinctively lean to that a lot. And in improv land, the arch nemesis of yes and is yeah, but. And it's basically the same vibe as no. It's like looking at the worst case scenario or like that must be nice. And even like sarcasm, there's certain energies that kind of live in that yeah, but energy, but it's very blocking and stifling instead of saying, I hear you. Yes, I hear you. And then be curious about what is behind that idea. How do we pull more out of that and see where we can go with it? Like everything that exists in our world came from someone's idea that was yes anded. And anytime I feel a little bit like frustrated about something, I just remind myself of how totally magical that is.
That is. I love you sharing that. And you're right. You know, the word but in, almost in any context is the arch nemesis to so much of communication.
Yeah.
How many apologies we either give or receive that always say, I'm sorry if, or so it's the if, but, uh-huh. you know, if I offended you, but instead of just saying, I'm sorry, I offended you mm-hmm. because the person's perception is their reality.
Oh,
but
yeah.
we always use the but as kind of a qualifier
or
an if as a qualifier. So I can see where that's the arch nemesis. For
oh,
sure.
yeah. And yet it's so weird because it is our comfort zone. I mean, a large percentage of humanity, which is why there should be endless work for me to keep getting to go play with people, because we will start catching, like, when we're even inadvertently yeah butting, just out of the nature of putting our defense up or wanting to make sure that our point is being heard. And there's all sorts of different angles that come up when we are in yeah but land.
That term cracks me up. The yeah butting, yeah butting and yeah but land.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in addition to being CEO of Improv Team Culture, you also are a speaker coach for business professionals, and you created the Ovation Speaker Experience to help folks really expand their impact as captivating speakers. Yeah. How long have you been doing that? And what was the impetus of you doing that to augment the other piece?
Yeah, it just sort of came up because I've been speaking on stages for a long time, not only in comedy performances, but even as a youth, like I started speaking anytime I could get a microphone. And so initially I started doing speaker coaching because I had people coming to me asking if I could help them review their speech, make it funnier, help them to be more creative in the structure, just because they saw me speak somewhere. And then I was like, okay, several people have asked me to do this, so maybe I should look into this a little bit more. And just like any communication space that we find ourselves in pretty much any role, a sales position, a leadership role, like, it doesn't really matter what position we have, being able to communicate in an articulate way, in a compelling manner, if we want to share an idea, those things are all the same in leadership communication as they are on stage. So it was a really natural fit. And so I really just kind of looked through, okay, we've got all these improv rules, which I teach about 10 different improv rules. You know, as long as people stay with me, they learn more and more of these different principles. And I just gave a slight adaptation of how you look at it in a better way to connect with your audience. Instead of being on stage with a scene partner, you're still making it about your audience, or no one wants to listen to you. So there was a lot of just natural transition. And when I saw even more interest, I just was like, okay, now I need to kind of just package it in a way that I could make it more readily available for people who really want to stand out as a great communicator and a powerful leader. Mm.
So is the Ovation Speaker Experience, I should ask this, are both of them both team oriented, or is one more designed for individuals?
Yeah. So the Ovation Speaker Experience is a branch off of Improv Team Culture, and it is for individual speakers to kind of go through a program to figure out what stories to share. If they're feeling pulled to the stage and they don't really know why, it's really figuring out which elements were transformative to them that might be helpful for other people. And also, like, what tools do they teach and how do we merge them together so that people really are drawn in to learn from you? So yeah, the Ovation, all of the speaker training components are really for an individual, although they are sometimes in a group setting. I do one-on-one coaching, but more often it's in a group container. And so everyone kind of gets to learn too, as they see each other getting coached on how to form their stories and hone in on, like, the way they are delivering their message, versus like Improv Team Culture's signature product is a group training for teams, anywhere from 4 or 5 people to, I mean, we do presentations for thousands of people. It's just a different configuration and more like a keynote, but interactive. Everything's interactive, though, at the end of the day.
Right. You're so right. You're so right. So again, specifically the Ovation speaker experience, is that more of a one-off class, or is it a series of classes?
Great question. So I currently have 2 options. If some people really want to fast track it, I offer a VIP experience that's 1 day and it's virtual, so I can help people from wherever. But they will chart out a whole half day of 4.5 hours of going fast tracking that process. And I'll talk them through their stories and their tools and show them in one session how to formulate a keynote from start to finish. And then let them know, like, if they need accompanying slides or whatever visual aids. And then most people are going through a 12-week program, which has 12 weeks worth of stuff that's packaged, and they go through that as it becomes available. And then they get on live calls too, but that's rolling. So people can start anytime. And then the coaching calls are virtual. And then occasionally I put on live shows, live events, where those same clients can step on stage and present. And we actually, like, record really high quality sizzle reels and get their new headshots and get the whole media kits for them to be able to start getting paid gigs. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been doing it for years.
Wow.
It's got a few layers, but yeah.
Pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
Are there any, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but are there any tips that you could provide listeners who might be in a position where they have to do either corporate presentations or, again, I tell people we present ourselves every single day. Oh, I don't care who you're in front of, but the idea is any tips for how to begin, you know, an icebreaker or what have you, but any sage tips that you can provide?
I think one of the best starting points is if you are presenting, invite yourself to spend time on understanding why you care about it. What, even if it's a business thing, lots of people come to me because they present in their company and they're good at telling their company's story and their company's mission. And people want to hear why you care and also why it matters to them. So my very first step to people is really to just sit with yourself and talk about, you know, to yourself, like, what are the stories that drew me in? Why do you love what you do? What are those personal aha moments that you've had? Because you need to know for yourself why you care, what, or how those certain things that you sell, your programs, or maybe some, you know, sometimes people find out that they don't really love what they're doing and they want to look for something more because they've revisited what they're passionate about. And so I think that it would definitely be the number one starting point is really turning the mirror on yourself, asking yourself some honest questions about what are the things that have formed you to be the person you are today? And how can you take what has been so formative for you and use that as a gift to help other people?
So what I'm hearing is make it a personal connection, not just a rote company mission statement.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what happens in so many presentations.
Oh, my gosh.
You hear a rote mission, values, you know, vision statement.
And yeah.
But you have to internalize it. And when you internalize it and it comes from the heart, then people feel what it means to you.
100%. Yeah. And I remember feeling that way working in corporate. I remember having one boss many, many years ago who was very much the mentality of leave your personal life at the door. Like no one cares what you have going on. And I'm like, I know that still exists sometimes because I still hear that when I'm working with teams and I just don't understand it. We cannot lose the human element. People are more loyal. They're more engaged. They're higher producers if they feel like there's that human element. And so understanding each other's stories really shows us how much more we have in common, those interests, those gaps in knowledge where we want to learn from each other. Stories are everything, in my opinion.
You are so right. You're speaking my language. Let's shift a little and talk a little bit about your podcast, uh-huh. Which has hard in it.
It does.
That's why
it's a tongue twister. I didn't realize it.
It really is. The podcast, I Hardly Know Her.
Yes.
And you have several episodes and you've been doing it for a couple of years.
Have.
So what was the impetus of that and what's that all about?
Oh man. You know, I used to think that I had to be famous for anything for me to say, like anything that I say to matter. And when I was not getting famous in my younger years, I kind of lost hope and motivation. I was feeling a little bit down that maybe I wasn't going to be able to reach people in a meaningful way or have some kind of positive impact in my life. And one of my favorite jokes, of course, is like when you hear like liquor at the liquor store, you know, liquor, I hardly know her because I'm just immature like that.
Me too.
So that was one of my favorite jokes. And so then I was thinking about, I hardly know her. And I was like, well, people don't know me. Who am I to even share my opinion? Who cares? And so that was definitely why I chose the name was that someone might hear something. And even if only one other person hears it, and honestly, sometimes when I was talking through things that were important to me, I might be the only person that hears it, but hearing my own verbal processing helped me to still be a better individual. And I think that's a win too. So it really came from wanting to have a place to share things that I cared about and understand myself more deeply so that I could understand even more how to have a better impact in the work that I care so much about. So the big thing was that I came up with a tagline by accident, I think in one of my early episodes, where I was like, hey, you don't have to be a big deal to do big things. And that was really something I was experiencing in my own life, kind of coming out of a dark season of things and knowing my kids relied on me. And I was like, I'm a big deal to them. And if I don't treat myself as a big deal to myself, then I'm not no good to anybody. So it was kind of, it bloomed from a dark place of self-reflection and challenging myself to do better with my life.
I like that. It's so true. So true. And your podcast is, I've listened to a few episodes. It's really, really good. And I'd recommend to the listeners out there, again, it's I Hardly Know Her. You might come up with a couple that with that title, but again, put it under Megan McCaleb. And I hardly know her podcast as well. Well worth your listen for sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You also are an award-winning author. Your book, Not My Plan, Sucking It In Until I Had to Push It Out. And this is essentially your story about mm-hmm. when you were 18 years old, a senior in high school, mm-hmm. found yourself pregnant, yep. and then what happened in your life thereof. Yeah. So why don't you share with the listeners a little bit about your story and then, you know, what the impetus of the book was.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is like the perfect example of really knowing yourself and the stories that shaped us, because that was a story that happened to me very young in my life. I had this unplanned pregnancy. I ultimately chose to place that child for adoption. It was a choice I got to make for myself. And then the environment I grew up in and the religious background and all the different things, I felt very much like I was not supposed to ever talk about it again. It was very much a, you don't want to be shamed, judgment, you know, all the things that many of us can relate to feeling at some point in time. So I really didn't talk about it very much over the years, unless there was a specific need for an adoption conversation, right? And then I just remember feeling in 2015, I just felt really strongly that I should share my adoption story. The mother who raised my daughter was also feeling that at the same time. We had just kind of started communicating a little bit more. And I just thought, I'm going to just share this story because it was really something that formed a lot of my character traits of how I wanted to think deeply about stuff and serve other people with my decisions and be very mindful. So I shared it and then realized that it actually was a lot of answers to my own questions of how I got into comedy was really because I needed that nurturing to my heart and that, you know, that release you get when you laugh, because it just feels good to have that stress and forget your cares for a moment. So very long story short, it ended up being something that I just felt compelled to do. And then it turned out that that actually helped me further influence the way I teach my work principles, all of those improv rules, because I put them into effect in having hard conversations around that particular topic, which happens to be unplanned pregnancies. And that's a pretty hot topic in our country and beyond. And it helps to reinforce that we can't have productive conversations with yeah, but. We have to honor each other and hear each other's stories for what they are without putting that judgment on each other. And I mean, I could go on and on and on, but you should just read the book and then you can learn more. But it really opened my eyes to why stories are so critical to us being able to expand as individuals and definitely to grow as business leaders.
For sure. And I know you touched on some of this, so, and I don't want to downplay that, but how else did that experience shape your life besides just purely your career? How else did it shape your life personally?
You know, it really opened up a freedom I didn't know was possible, because I had been carrying around a lot of unresolved trauma that I wasn't aware of. So it really lightened my load to feel like I wasn't hiding behind anything. And sure, there was kind of judgment and negative things that came from it from the outside world. And yet it really helped me feel very empowered as an individual, because I was out in front of my own story and I was sharing things. And what became more important to me was that my story created a safe space where people would share with me. And I saw how much those tethers really are to help free each other from shackles of shame and feeling like we are failures or losers or whatever horrible things we feel. So it has helped me in so many ways, and having since reconnected with the daughter I placed for adoption and building that relationship and just seeing how vital, being loving and kind of getting back to a home base of kindness and gentleness with ourselves and others, it really changed everything. It made me incredibly, like, my empathy level went through the roof, because I just saw how many other people were hurting and I wanted to give them that freedom that I was feeling.
So inspiring. The power of vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what you're speaking to. And do you, again, getting personal, and you don't have to share this, but do you get an opportunity to see your daughter or the adoptive parents?
Yeah, actually, we ended up getting quite close. So, and in good timing too, the week that I filed for divorce from my 16-year marriage with, at the time, four very young children, And so I was feeling a lot of big feelings there. That was on a Monday. And then that Friday, I reunited with that daughter who was about to start her senior year. And she wanted to connect before she started that school year so we could be more involved. I say we because she met me 1 week. And then the birth father, my boyfriend who got me pregnant, who also lives here in town, and we're great friends now. She met him and his family the following week. And we just started getting to know each other and really seeing how incredible it was, the nature, like the quirks and the different things that were there genetically, and yet the things that are taught. And, you know, I honestly don't talk to the parents as often as I should because they live here now. Mm. And I love them so dearly. And I talk to my biological daughter nearly every day. She's married now and is expecting a second baby. So I am technically grandma age, which is crazy. And it's been really cool because we get to talk through when we're still having hard feelings about things because it's a traumatic experience. And we each, from the adoptive parents not being able to have their own kids, to me having my crisis of getting pregnant by accident, to baby going from one mother's arms to another, you know, there's big feelings and experiences for all of us. And it just continues to show me how kindness and being caring and listening to each other so that we can support each other to heal from those things. It just continues to be a great lesson and blessing.
What a story of life value. Truly. I mean, what a story. And folks, honestly, I can't recommend it enough. Not My Plan, Sucking It In Until I Had to Push It Out by Megan McCaleb, available on Amazon everything is.
Yes, and, I know. And I need more of those. I actually wrote it originally under my married name. And so all my review, like none of that passed through when I updated it. I was like, no. But yeah, so that's the latest edition. Nothing changed from the original content other than I did add in some more stuff of like, the learning continues years later, some things I've learned. And so it's been pretty cool to have that as like a mile marker in my life.
And this picture of you when you're 18, I mean, look at your cute little self there. That's awesome.
Awesome. That young girl, bless her heart.
What a cute little daughter there too.
Thank you.
But I recommend the book for sure. And Megan, thanks for sharing this. So we've talked about so much and I know you have a website where people can reach you because you offer such amazing services for folks. Yeah. What's the best website?
Best way to connect with me is improvteamculture.com.
All right. And they can reach out whether they're interested in the course or if they're also interested in the Ovation program. They can do that singly or individually.
Exactly.
All right. And then any place that you're going to be publicly speaking or publicly doing any comedy that
you
we
know,
can...
I just had a big headlining thing at the Knitting Factory, but I don't have a ton of public stuff coming up. Most of my stuff is corporate or private events. Okay. So everyone just needs to talk to their boss and have me hired for the next event.
That's so true. Well, you've got a compelling story. I'm sure I've never seen your comedy, but I'm sure it's fantastic. It's been a real pleasure having you on today. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you sharing your story and what a great story of triumph for both of you and what you do for others in your vocation as well. And you took something that you started doing as a kind of a challenge where somebody calls you on stage you weren't expecting. And now look where you're teaching others how to implement that in their life work. And I applaud that. I think that's amazing.
Thanks, Danny. So, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Really, really cool. Well, and thank you again for joining us. Again, Megan McCaleb, and check out her book. Check out her websites. You will not be disappointed. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time. Take care.